I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lore cast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast. I'm In7 the Legend.
And I'm Genesis. Join us
as we explore along tides of light
and through shoals of dust
to see where this lore began
and consider where it may go.
Spectres, welcome back to another episode of the Mass Effect Lorecast. I'm your host, In7 the Legend, but you can call me Sam. And joining me as always now is Genesis. Genesis, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Work was a little hectic today, but I got through it.
I feel that in my bones. Every week I am looking forward to the weekend. But we can appreciate this as a veritable weekend with the Lorecast, although we don't really have very nice and easy things to talk about today, and that's why we've brought in our two other huge BioWare fan friends, excuse me, Teacup and SheCup. Thank you for joining. Teacup, how are you doing?
Doing good. Just excited to be here.
SheCup, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for inviting us back.
Now, if those of you who are listening or watching and you don't know Teacup or SheCup, they run the Dragon Age Lorecast, among other shows. And so they are huge BioWare fans, and we've got some big BioWare news to talk about today. Genesis, you want to go ahead and introduce this topic and how you kind of found out about this piece of news?
Yes. So there have been another round of layoffs and terminations at the BioWare studio. And I think it was you that messaged me going, did you see the news about Trick Weeks? And that just kind of spiraled everything from there, learning more and more about who had been let go, who got permanently relocated, things like that. And it's just kind of sad to see all of the changes that are happening. And then we talked about it for a minute and we're like, we've got to bring on Dragon Age so that way we can talk about it, the four of us going through this.
And
because it kind of affects everything.
Permanently relocated, for those of you who did not see the official BioWare blog post or read any news coverage about it, there is a significant difference between relocation and termination, although I know it sounds a little bit like corpo speak, like, oh, you know, maybe they'll say on Sam's deathbed, oh, did he die? No, he just permanently relocated somewhere else. But yes, we have a lot to talk about today. And like I just mentioned, there was a BioWare blog post that kind of kicked all this off. That's where it started. And that's where we're going to start today. We're going to walk our listeners through exactly what we learned. And I think the order in which we learned it, basically. So first of all, there's this BioWare blog post that gets, it was unexpected. And whenever there's an unexpected BioWare blog post, my heart like skips a beat because I am terrified about what it might be. And this one came on January 29th. And it says, I'll just read through it, and then we can talk about it as we go, right? It says, hello, everyone. Today, we are turning towards the future and preparing for the next chapter in BioWare's story. Okay, I'm intrigued. I feel good. Now, it feels like this is the official post-Veilguard release update we're waiting for. It says, as we announced in August 2023, we are changing how we build games to meet the needs of our upcoming projects and hold ourselves to the highest quality standards. Okay, where are they going with this? Now that Dragon Age: The Veilguard has been released, a core team at BioWare is developing the next Mass Effect game under the leadership of veterans from the original trilogy, including Mike Gamble, Preston Watamaniuk, I hope I pronounced that correctly, I probably did not, Derek Watts, Parrish Lay, and others. In keeping with our fierce commitment to innovating during the development and delivery of Mass Effect, we have challenged ourselves to think deeply about delivering the best experience to our fans. We are taking this opportunity between full development cycles to reimagine how we work at BioWare. Fudge. But I didn't say fudge. That is how I felt when I got to this point in the blog post. Teacup, how did you feel?
Well, given this actually was reminiscent of a similar blog post that came from another, from a AAA studio of a podcast that we do for Assassin's Creed. Ubisoft has had a similar thing of, we are committed to quality, we are committed to this, we are reimagining what. And when I get to this point in the blog post, I'm just like, oh, people got fired.
Yeah. Yeah, that is exactly where my mind went as well. Only proceeded to get worse as we went through this. The next part says, given this stage of development, we don't require support from the full studio. Fudge! Okay, keep reading. We have incredible talent here at BioWare. Yes, you do. You better keep them. And so we have worked diligently over the past few months to match many of our colleagues with other teams at EA that had open roles that were a strong fit. Crap. Sheikah, what did you think when you were reading this? I mean, it's strong corpo speak here.
Yes, and like, I mean, I work in corporate America, so I'm just like, okay, this is a lot of bullshit that means nothing other than you fired people. But I do think it's even worse, and it just incredibly poor taste, in my opinion, to fire people, let people go, transition people unexpectedly, perhaps, and then not even admit to the public that that's what you've done.
Is it surprising, though?
No, absolutely not. I always say about a lot of things going on in our world, I'm disappointed, but not surprised.
Oh, man. That sounds like a parent. That sounds like what my mom would say to me. Actually, I think she said those exact words one time when I came home from band class and I got a C. I was devastated. I never recovered from that. Clearly, I still remember it. But I am going to give BioWare the same talk that my mom gave me after I got that C in band class. I'm disappointed. And I was when I read that, much like you just mentioned. It is one thing to do the painful thing of downsizing a studio through whatever methods that they want to dress it up as. It's another thing to treat the audience and your fans like they don't know what the heck is going on. And that was a little, that bugs me, but I've seen it so much in corporate America that I just don't, I'm not shocked. Genesis, yeah. How did you feel? I mean, once you got to this point in the blog post, were you at all like, was there any doubt in your mind that this meant layoffs or reassignments or what have you?
Oh, no doubt in my mind whatsoever. I think my level of shock went up when key names like Trick and Karen Weeks were missing from this list of OG trilogy or original trilogy veterans. Because if you notice, that list now contains no women. And I'm like, great, less and less representation. Gotta love that.
Right. There is the Nebulous and others that the BioWare general manager, Gary McKay, includes there. And McKay actually finishes out the blog post by writing, "Today's news will see BioWare become a more agile, focused studio that produces unforgettable RPGs." More agile. Why?
No!
Agile. Drive me up a wall. And so I thought, why does this sound familiar? And although I wasn't thinking of the Ubisoft blog post that you were mentioning, Teacup, there's another blog post that this sounds very familiar to. And in fact, McKay links to it in this January blog post, the one that McKay himself wrote on August 23rd, 2023, writing, In order to meet the needs of our upcoming projects, continue to hold ourselves to the highest standard of quality and ensure BioWare can continue to thrive in an industry that's rapidly evolving, we must shift towards a more agile and more focused studio. Then goes on to write, a core veteran team led by Mike Gamble continues their pre-production work on the next Mass Effect. So, almost copy and paste language from August 23rd, 2023, when we learned that 50 people had been cut, to now when we learn that people are cut, not cut, how many people are cut, from which departments they're cut, we don't know, because this notice from McKay doesn't tell us. And I see Genesis trying deeply to compose herself over there, probably trying not to say something that she'll regret.
No, it's not that I would regret saying that I'm saddened by this many people losing their job all at once. I don't think that's not something I would regret saying out loud. And that's the truth of it. For me, yes, it sucks that the video game company that I love is slowly eating itself. But it also just really sucks for the people who are all affected by this all at once. You know, I've been in my industry for, it'll be 21 years in June, July, 21 years in my industry. And so I've seen people come and go and throughout all that. But for a mass layoff like that, I've never seen that in my industry other than when COVID hit. That was just a weird time where everything was off the wall. So it just, it hurts my heart to know that people that, you know, we've talked about on this show, I've talked about on my other shows, we have tried to get them on for interviews because we love the work that they do. And now they're out of that work. Not being able to do the thing that you love, that just sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I've not experienced something this scale or this drastic, I guess you could say, in my own career. At my job, my day job, we did have layoffs last year. And it was kind of like a, hey, team, gather around, here's who you're not going to see anymore thing. But that was certainly more transparent. Teacup, SheCup, what were your first thoughts, you know, after finishing the blog post, sitting for a second to digest it? Because you both run the Dragon Age Lorecast. I mean, Veil Guard just came out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that with Veil Guard, there are a lot of, you know, just mixed opinions about it online. And I think that I have to say that I think the targeted campaign from right wing YouTubers, it definitely helped, you know, impact the performance of the game. We just have to be honest about that. And I think that that is at play here. But I kind of started seeing these red flags when, like, I don't even remember how long ago it was, but they basically were like, yeah, Veil Guard's not getting any DLC, and they like tried to spin it very positively. And I was like, oh, okay. So like, this is bad. So, you know, I mean, again, disappointing, sad, but also not surprised.
Yeah, I think there are a couple things that I got from this blog post, mainly because I work in communications with like religious nonprofit work, churches and things. And so this is a blog post that a church would do when they are out of money, but they don't want to tell people that they're out of money. Because you don't want people to panic, and your donors that you do have, or your clientele that you do have, to jump ship because they're like, oh, this is crashing and burning. I'm not saying that BioWare is crashing.
I was just going to say, are you saying that BioWare's out of money? Because I don't think I've seen anything that would suggest that, especially
I don't think
topped the Steam chart for like a straight week when it came out, right?
Yes, and I think that EA's, well, we can talk about this in a different point, but I think EA's projections for the Veil Guard were unrealistic. If they are what they are, I still have yet to find an official source that says these were our actual projections for this. But I also think that the phrase that keeps coming back to me in this is like completing or trying to like committed to creating unforgettable RPGs. It sounds to me like they're trying to kind of go back and reassure the fan base, like, we're going to make things like the original KOTOR. We're going to make things like Mass Effect 1. We're going to make things like Dragon Age Origins. Like, can these things that elicit are things that got us into this, these fandoms and everything like that. But I think that with this, I am disappointed. And especially just because, you know, we could get into kind of a Ship of Theseus argument of who is left. I mean, I know there are still people left who were around BioWare when it started and everything, but the weeks were OGs, especially for Dragon Age.
And we'll get into a little bit more about who definitively we know has departed BioWare through one way or another. A lot of people disclose that themselves. We'll get to a little bit more of that on the mid-break. But it's interesting what I'm hearing you say, T-Cup, is that basically the very fact that they were willing to cut again when they did cut 50 before, I think some estimates had them around 250 as a studio at that time in August 2023. If 50 were cut, that leaves them around 200, which lines up with some contemporary reporting I've seen. But then they cut an unknown amount of people. So we're kind of left in this vague kind of twilight zone, vague era, or, you know, like just kind of like black void of where we don't know who was cut, how many people were cut, in what areas were they cut. And by the way, not to toot the horn of journalism, but this is exactly where journalism comes in handy, so that you can have these journalists ask questions. And so I do want to turn our attention toward some article that had broken shortly thereafter, not too long afterward. It's by Jason Schreier. Many of you have heard of Jason Schreier. If you haven't, Schreier reports for Bloomberg. And so we got a little bit more definitive information from Bloomberg when Schreier put out and reported that dozens of employees at developer BioWare were given some staffing news in December. Schreier goes on to say that they were going to be loaned out to other teams inside EA, like those making Iron Man and Skate. Okay, that's not entirely promising. However, Schreier cites people familiar with the matter, writing that this week, the group was informed that those loans, meaning those people who went over to Iron Man and Skate, wouldn't be coming back, that they had morphed into, quote-unquote, permanent relocations. Schreier writes, they were no longer BioWare employees who were temporarily on assignment elsewhere. Now they worked for whichever EA subsidiary had borrowed them. How would you feel as an employee, Genesis, if your employer said, hey, we got like another subsidiary company in a branch where you don't really know anybody, and we're going to send you over there. It's just temporary because of workflow reasons. And then, you know, maybe you get there, maybe you're on the way and you're transitioning, and then they tell you, actually, this is for good.
I'd be reviewing my contract for, did I sign up for something like this? And I'd rebuke against it. It feels shady and underhanded to be saying, hey, this team really needs your help. You're critical and key. I think that you'd be a really good fit to help them out for a little bit. So that way you can come back and have, you know, like have your normal job back. to permanently relocate on something that was supposed to be temporary, unless I'm the one that initiated that conversation of like, oh my gosh, this team is amazing. I would love to stay here instead and help put this game fully out. It just seems grody. I don't have a better word for it. It gives me the ick.
It's yeah. It feels shady to read about it like this. I wonder if there was some kind of different level of, you know, internal communication where they were trying to keep their employees as up to date as possible. I wonder if that maybe I'm just giving the EA the benefit of the doubt here unjustly. Either way you cut it, it still kind of feels like a switcheroo.
Mm-hmm. A little underhanded.
I wonder sometimes, though, like the phrase that this week they found out gives that kind of underhanded thing. But I also wonder is if it was, you can keep this job or you can be out of a job because there's not one back for you at BioWare.
Yeah, and that's such a common corporate tactic to try and get people. Sometimes it's to get them to quit on their own so that you don't have to pay them severance as opposed to firing them. I'm not sure if that's how their contracts work. But yeah, it certainly, for those of us who have ever been laid off or thrown around from a corporation, it doesn't sit well. Shelby and Teacup, I mean, honestly, for Dragon Age, do you think this means anything? Because Veilguard came out, you guys as a fandom are in a very different spot than we are in the Mass Effect fandom, where we're kind of just waiting for the other shoe to drop. But Dragon Age, Veilguard did come out. It's like a finished product. It's there.
Yeah, it's done. It's been released. And I mean, there's a lot of theorizing in the fandom, as we like to do. And a lot of people think like, okay, Dragon Age is done after the end of this game. I think it could absolutely end and there would not be a lot of lingering questions about the lore, just straight up. So, I mean, with this combined with the end of Veilguard and just kind of Corinne Bush leaving and the Weeks leaving is kind of like, okay, well, I guess Dragon Age is over then.
Teacup, if Dragon Age is over... I mean, first of all, is that how you feel? And if so, you know, where do you go from here?
That's a great question. One that I don't really have a concrete answer to, but I do think that for me personally, I don't know. I could see Dragon Age being over. And personally, from my standpoint, I would be okay. Like, as a fan standpoint, I would be okay if Dragon Age was over. Like, the Veilguard did answer a lot of questions. It answered a lot that was left lingering from Inquisition. And I think I said this a couple weeks ago to Shelby and just said, you know, I'd be okay if the Veilguard was the last game. I'd be okay with that.
Just to kind of add on and answer Sam's question, too, another reason I feel this way is partially because of what Cheryl Chi posted, I think, on Blue Sky. And, you know, people on the internet were talking about, after this news broke, about Dragon Age being quote unquote dead. And she posted and said, Dragon Age isn't dead because it's yours now. Direct quote. So to me, that almost is a confirmation like, yeah, you guys are right. But also it belongs to the fandom now. So I'm kind of like, that's hopeful in a way that like the things that frustrated us about the games, like, yeah, we can write about them in fan fiction and we can, you know, headcanon things and make it our own. But also it's bittersweet, I think.
That almost sounds like saying goodbye to someone who was terminally ill. Like, you know, I've been through that before where you're happy they're not suffering anymore, but they're gone.
Yeah.
So is that how, you know, I don't have my ear to the ground. I don't have my finger to the pulse of the Dragon Age community. Would you say that that's how, like, the majority of people feel in that community right now?
I don't know if I would say the majority. I know a lot of people do feel that way. A lot of people also loved the Veil Guard. So again, I think it's just kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah. Genesis, you are a fan of both fandoms.
Mm-hmm.
So that also puts you in a kind of unique position here, because you've got one foot in the Mass Effect fandom and one foot in the Dragon Age fandom. How do you see this in terms of, you know, Mass Effect has yet to come out? Are they really done with Dragon Age?
Knowing how Veil Guard ends and all of the different ways that the lore can be wrapped up, the story that we've been following, where we've started in Origins to where it ends, I think that it can be wrapped up, and I think that it could end there. Could it continue on? Yes, they've definitely left avenues open. The story could pick up and continue on from there. It could also continue on in other ways. Dragon Age came out with a great anime series. I can't remember the name off the top of my head. What was it?
Absolution.
Thank you. They also have great novels and comic books and things like that. So even if the video game IP is put to rest, there's still a whole bunch of other ways that the story itself could continue on.
Yeah. I'm trying to be empathetic right now with the Dragon Age fan. I'm trying to put myself in a Dragon Age fan's shoes and just thinking, man, if I heard that, I would probably like be sitting in my bedroom with all the lights off, staring at the wall, thinking it's really over, man. Okay. All right. Maybe I've like telepathically connected with someone who's actually doing that right now. But
I mean, I kind of did that when I finished the game. I sat just sitting there at a blank screen on my computer going, whoa, okay. Mm-hmm. I felt done. I felt complete.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that.
And I think that's so really true for this point. It's kind of like, it's kind of that point where post update of Mass Effect 3, where we got the extended cut ending for Mass Effect 3. And you're like, okay, like, it's done. It's over. Shepard is whatever. And it's over. And I was personally like, okay with Mass Effect being over. And then they talked about Andromeda and I was like, oh, well, what are they going to do next? Similar to Assassin's Creed, after when they announced Black Flag, I was like, what are they going to do? You know, spoiler for a 10 plus year old game, Desmond is dead. What are they going to do next?
And so if the story, so I haven't finished Veil Guard yet, and I very much appreciate all of you to like doing backflips as to not spoil it for me. But if on top of the narrative weight, then you get this notification about BioWare seemingly just being done with Veil Guard and just like axing or reassigning or to permanent relocation for people. That has to be very discouraging. I feel like there's some kind of like little starlight of hope that Mass Effect fans are holding on to because our game hasn't come out yet. It is still in pre-production. So, you know, a lot of people were apparently permanently reassigned, as reported by Schreier. And it sounds like it was a bit of a switcheroo that EA pulled on them. However, they do still have a job. So at least there's that. But as I mentioned earlier, this is complicated because some people were indeed laid off. And, you know, why don't we go to the mid break and we will get into some of the lingering questions that people may have about who we know has been laid off, how many people. We'll dig into some of EA's own critiques that we have. But first, let's hop over to the mid-break.
We have beef, we have bacon, we have beer, the foods of my people.
Young men have funny ideas of what Asari are like. I blame the extranet and computer games. Rex?
Shepard.
Grunt?
Shepard.
Rex? Grunt?
All right, and now we are in the mid-break, and I believe that, Genesis, you have another sound effect or voice line for me to guess, right?
Oh, yes, I do. Okay. Let me double check that you'll be able to hear it. Let me know.
We'll do it live.
I've served with you from the day you took command. I'd follow you into hell.
But not into my quarters.
Chain of command, Shepard. I'm not Caden. I don't think it could work, not with both of us in uniform.
Well, that's, that's Joker. Clearly, that is Joker. I did not recall any kind of ability for Femship to flirt with Joker. This is hilarious, though. When is this?
Well, that you've got to decide that. Is this ME 1, 2, or 3?
That sounds like a Mass Effect 2 kind of dialogue scene.
Okay.
Because it references Caden, right? So it mm-hmm. has to pull that from the memory banks of your Mass Effect 1 playthrough. So I'm going to go with Mass Effect 2.
Okay. Shelby, Austin, I know you both have definitely played Mass Effect. Do you guys want to take a guess?
I'll say 3 just to be different.
Okay.
I'm going to go with 2 because I feel like it can't be 3 because why would Joker make this comment where Edie could hear?
Interessante. Okay, so yes, you are obviously right. This is a conversation between Joker and Femship. This is a Mass Effect 3 conversation where you are sitting at the bar with Joker having the conversation if he should pursue a relationship with Edie. As a Femship, you can say, no, don't go with Edie, get with me. And he'll pop off a line about you both being in uniform, and that's never going to work. The Caden-specific dialogue is only happens if you romanced Caden in 1 or you locked in a brand new relationship with him in Mass Effect 3. So the Caden line is in there for extra.
Of course, yeah. And that would explain a lot why I never ran into that, because that's like the renegade route that you can take with him, right, at the bar. And I've only done the renegade route with him at the bar once, and that was as Broship. So that would explain why I never found that one. All right, that's fun. And you know what? Next week, I promise, I am going to get my own voice line that I'm going to pull from the video game, one of them, and I'll try and quiz you and try and stump you on what we can do. So, all right, let's move on to some reviews. It looks like we got 2 new reviews, and one of them from our very own Commander Shrinky Shep. That sound means that Commander Shrinky Shep is our Tier 6 Reaper tier patron. So Commander Shrinky Shep writes, I'm Commander Shrinky Shep, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel. First of all, Tom, thank you for sponsoring this amazing lorecast and getting it off the ground. Your knowledge of history, religion, and other games and topics highlights the relevance of Mass Effect, the Mass Effect universe has in our own world. Best of luck with your other podcasts and endeavors. Genesis, I'm excited to hear more of your thoughts and insights about Mass Effect and have enjoyed hearing you on so many episodes so far. As a longtime fan of Mass Effect, this lorecast continues to rejuvenate my interest in the games and all their entertainment, moral, and political significance. Lorecast's analysis, debates, patron chats, and interviews with gaming and other experts are all incredibly well done. After over 1,500 hours on various playthroughs of the original trilogy, even a diehard fan like myself can use a break from the games, but this lorecast never gets stale. I especially appreciate the banter between the hosts, voice impressions, Bane anybody, and hot takes. And Sam, I appreciate all the research and other work you put into the show. You deserve an honorary doctorate in Mass Effect Studies. Maybe I should get like a mock degree and have it printed and framed right behind me. While you've mentioned the indoctrination theory a few times, I'd love to see a more detailed presentation of the topic with arguments for and against. Ah, it looks like this review must have been held up and it finally got through the works and over to us. So, obviously, we've already done the indoctrination theory with none other than Commander Shrinky Ship. And Commander Shrinky Ship finishes this out by saying, "Don't mind the shadowy figures in your peripheral vision, headaches, buzzing sounds, and strange thoughts entering your consciousness. I'm sure you'll make the decision to cover this topic entirely of your own free will. Foghorn!" How diabolical. Thank you, Commander Shrinky Ship. This is very kind of you. And another new review, this one, 5 stars by Locke S., says, "Best podcast. I absolutely love this podcast, and any fan of Mass Effect or sci-fi in general should definitely take a listen. These dudes love the community and do lore, character analysis, and everything in between for the deeply loved series. Keep up the good work, guys. Whenever I see a new post, it makes my day." Well, thank you, Locke. Very much appreciated. We definitely do this every week for all of you. So, and especially during weeks like this week, where we got to talk about like some not so fun stuff either, you know, like this doesn't exactly bring a smile to my face, this topic, but reading these reviews certainly do. Now we also got to shout out our tier 5 patrons. Let's go with Draco and Ed Boy, Kira C, Lieutenant Ticino, Red Trobot, and I think I finally said it right. Superfly 440 and William. Thank you all so much for your continued support, and of course, thank you to our tier 6 patron. Shrinky Shep, aka Chris. For those of you who did not ever see or listen to that indoctrination theory episode, go listen to it. Commander Shrinky Shep is, surprise, a psychiatrist. So that is all we got for the mid break this week. Let's go back and get back with the rest of the show.
After time adrift among open stars, along tides of light and through shoals of dust, I will return to where I began.
Salarian reproduction different. Very little sex drive. If intended to try human, would try you.
Ow, my pancreas.
Ow, my pancreas. That sound effect always kills me. All right, so we got more not-so-fun stuff to talk about. Let's talk about layoffs. How many people do we know have been laid off or permanently reassigned or otherwise are not working at BioWare right now? Well, the answer is very vague. In Schreier's article, of course, Schreier asked this, and I can only imagine that the answer was simply, "We're not going to comment on that," because Schreier writes, quote, "A spokesperson for EA declined to comment on specific numbers." That tells me that Schreier asked a few different how many questions. And, you know, where are they? You know, what departments, how many people, blah, blah. And they probably just gave him a flat no. So, you remember how we were talking about transparency, Genesis?
Yeah.
How do you feel about this?
I understand it from a corporate HR level. That I really, really do. I know that we all want exact numbers and data and details, but you've also got to remember, these are people's terminations. Like, you can't just call up any random business and go, "Hey, how many people did you terminate today? There are other people who want to know." Like, that's not public knowledge and information. So I understand from like kind of a privacy screen, if people decide that they want to go out and talk about it on their own, then they are absolutely allowed to. I also respect that the company doesn't want to put out exact information. Would it be nice if they gave us a general general number? Yeah, that would be good. But coming out with exact, precise data, I understand why they didn't from an HR perspective.
No, I actually am going to disagree with you here, because EA, Electronic Arts, is a publicly traded company. And I feel as if you were a publicly traded company, then you should be more transparent. You should be willing to disclose how many employees you've cut or permanently reassigned somewhere. And maybe we will hear a little bit about more about that when they have their investor call tomorrow. Tomorrow, we're recording this on February 3rd. I believe their investor call is supposed to be on February 4th. So maybe we will hear a little bit more about it then when they talk to their shareholders. However, just looking at the stock market graph here, it's not... It doesn't make you feel good that on January 29th at 9:30 a.m., they were sitting at 116 a share, and then by 11 a.m., which I would assume is after they made that announcement, the stock actually went up to 117.72 per share. And it slowly shifted down to about 11.16.75 after that. But by the end of the trading day, it was still up about a full dollar. So not exactly promising there. However, it is what it is. It's a publicly traded company. They don't want to disclose those numbers. The best that we can hope for from any gaming journalist is them asking and then us getting this, you know, EA declined to comment. Teacup, Sheikup, as lifelong BioWare fans, how do you feel when you see, you know, oh, corporate overlord won't answer questions about how many people are gone from my favorite studio?
I mean, it's disappointing, but it's EA, so I'm not surprised. I don't expect anything at all from EA. I do expect a little bit better from BioWare. For whatever reason, I feel like they've always been, at least they've treated their employees a little bit better than other gaming studios, but they are a subsidiary of EA. So,
Teacup, you're probably not shocked at this at all, right?
No, and like, you know, the terribleness of EA and their business practice has been a joke of the gaming industry and fans for a decade. I mean, let's remember the travesty that was Battlefront 2's release and the microtransactions and all of that. So, like, I'm never surprised by EA's behavior. And frankly, as I frequently said when we were talking about corporations on the Holocron Histories podcast, corporations exist to continue existing. They want that bottom line. And so they're always really going to be focused on that. And their focus and their priority will never be their employees. It will never be their customers. I mean, in a kind of roundabout way it is, but it will always be, how can we make money? And they will throw anything to the wolves to continue to make money.
I mean, it just, yeah, fair, but I don't like this new trend that we're getting into. When I say we, I mean like the gaming community, where we see studios axe, or the corporations axe studios right after they've put out a game. Thanks for your service. Don't let the door hit you on the butt on the way out, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's just kind of a slap in the face to, especially for games that have been in development for over a decade. It's such a slap in the face. And I think about Ubisoft that did layoffs like right before Christmas. Like, just like have some care for your employees, please.
Yeah. Unnamed sources familiar with what's happened are also tell Schreier that this is about 24 people who have been laid off, that there's also dozens who have been reassigned. Now, when we take a look at that a little bit closer, Schreier reports, and this is a pretty discouraging statistic, Schreier reports that BioWare is down to about 100 people now, whereas 2 years ago, it was... I want to say before those August 2023 layoffs, 2 years ago, it was about rumored to be about 250. And now we're down at or under 100, according to Schreier's reporting. Not promising, however, we also know that there's like a ton of video game studios that have put out huge, amazing games with fewer people than that. So it's not like it's impossible, but man, this belt tightening has been really high. Like, it's a strong belt tightening. This is like not just the Atkins diet. This is that high octane, supercharged Hollywood juice only diet.
Yeah. Or like we're eating beans and rice for dinner.
Hey, been there. You ever had sleep for
been
dinner?
There too.
I have.
I think. Oh, I forgot what I was going to say. ADHD brain.
Genesis.
That definitely.
I was just going to say 100 or 100 around 100 people at the studio. Do you think it matters basically for the next Mass Effect?
Oh, it absolutely matters. The only thing that I'm kind of holding hope on about is that just because they are not they're gone now with these people who have been relocated. And while they say that it's a permanent relocation, we also had this happen with Dragon Age, where they told us that people were working on the Mass Effect, the next upcoming Mass Effect game, and that they were pulled off of that to help finish Dragon Age. And so what I'm wondering is that just because you're being relocated to these other games that they have planning to come out, Iron Man, Skate, any other IP that I can't recall off the top of my head right now, just because you've been pulled over to help finish that game doesn't mean that you won't get pulled back to Mass Effect. Because especially if they're going with their true words that we're going to be an agile development company now, and that means that the whole team goes to finish one game, and then once that's done, we move on to the next one, and then we move on to the next one. And you've got your core veterans working on the IPs that they're most used to, and then this agile team is running around doing the rest of the work.
Agile.
I'm going to hold on. I know. I hate myself so much right now, but I'm going to hold on to that flicker of hope because I need it.
I'm reading another article from PC Gamer that reports that at its peak, BioWare consisted of three studios and conservatively over 400 employees. This had to have been around the 2017-2018 era, having three studios. So since then, about past 7 or 8 years, if I'm not mistaken, BioWare has shrank 75%. Is that right? Am I mathing correctly? 400 to less than 100 employees?
Yeah.
That's not promising. Now, BioWare's producer Mark Dara, I think that's how you say his name, had a former producer anyway, had predicted that the studio was basically going to become like a we can't walk and chew gum, almost like we can only do one game at a time thing.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of looks like we're there, because I cannot imagine them doing this if they realistically thought that they could be working on another game at the BioWare studio at the same time as Mass Effect. Now, I don't know a lot about game development. They're still in pre-production. I don't really know what all pre-production encompasses. However, I've read that pre-production is a really long stage of development comparatively to other stages, because you need to set the foundations. So maybe there is this little asterisk there when it comes to the development of the next Mass Effect. So maybe they can kind of get their cards right before they really start churning along on development for what we'll see. But that's neither here nor there. That's a lot of speculation. Teacup, you had some notes here about EA's underperformance in recent years.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about that because I think when we think about BioWare, it's we don't always expand it to EA and all of their other subsidiaries, of which they have many. So, you know, long before the Veil Guard underperformed, EA lost the rights to FIFA at the end of 2023, which is a $20 billion franchise. And College Football 25 also underperformed. And so both of those things, I think, are really big factors in these layoffs and the belt tightening at BioWare. I have to imagine that BioWare is not the only subsidiary of EA that is being asked to make these kinds of cuts.
Now, real quick, because I haven't played a FIFA game recently. I do love College Football 25.
I do too. I'm really surprised at this underperformance.
I am as well, because I thought they did a great job. Go Bucks, by the way. Sorry. For those of you who don't know, I'm a huge Ohio State Buckeyes fan, and they did win the championship. And on their way to the championship, they actually beat Teacup and Sheacup's favorite team. So
we don't have to talk about that right now.
Being a little vindictive right now.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about college football, Sam.
Okay.
Go Ducks.
Moving. Yes, that's right. The Buckeyes also trounced Genesis's favorite team on the way there. Go Bucks.
We're going to have to move him.
Moving on. Yeah. Moving on. I am shocked that College Football 25 underperformed. Do you know by how much? Because, I mean, they were really banking on this, the first college football game, video game in 11 years, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's been a long time, and I don't know the exact numbers. I was just doing some preliminary research for the show tonight and saw that, which also surprised me. But the FIFA thing was the big one that came to mind first when I was thinking about EA and, you know, just their general profits. And I think if I'm remembering the articles correctly, they lost like, I want to say $30 or $40 billion last year, which is, that's a lot of money to lose. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine, again, this is kind of a company-wide thing, not just a BioWare thing.
Okay. Well, I mean, I wonder how much longer tech companies can kind of ride that narrative of tech contraction, post-pandemic tech contraction, when they talk to their shareholders. I guess we'll see more when they do that investor call tomorrow. You know, I also want to talk about underperformance of Veil Guard, though, because that is a BioWare title. I don't have too much of a reference for, you know, how good a Dragon Age game is or ought to be, because Veil Guard is the first one that I've really put serious time into. That being said, I've only put like 35 hours into it, and I feel like I've kind of barely scratched the surface. Is it hard to kind of quantify how much Veil Guard underperformed? Do we know what kind of sales statistics BioWare or EA was looking for from Veil Guard? Because I know so much of its reception was marred by social media trolls. So
I think the numbers that I have seen is that within the first 2 months, the Veil Guard either had 1.5 million copies like sold, or I can't remember if that's what they recouped, but it's one there. And EA's, what they say EA's target for the first 2 months was 3 million, which I've seen other people talk about, like that's kind of unrealistic from EA's side. But I wonder sometimes too, with this underperformance, like has the like weight of the Veil Guard been weighing on BioWare, because they lost two IPs within the last 5 years, with both SWTOR, Star Wars The Old Republic, and Baldur's Gate. EA is still the publisher of The Old Republic, but it is a different subsidiary or third party. It is now a third party company outside of the EA family that manages The Old Republic. And we all know that multiplayer games, MMOs, are typically big money makers for a studio. Just in general, because it's just a longevity thing. When you have a live service game, you make more money because people are playing it all the time.
Now, you had mentioned that Veil Guard had made how much in the first month?
It's either 100 or 1.5 million copies sold, or that's how much they made. I can't remember.
Okay.
It's not how much they made. It's definitely 1 point something, or like 1.2, 1.3, 1.4, something like that.
Multiply that
million
by
players. Yeah. Yeah.
So for reference, I've got this statistic in front of me here. Mass Effect 3 sales in total. You want to guess how much Mass Effect 3 made? Total revenue.
Total revenue?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like 7 million. Let's go with that.
200 million.
My first guess.
That's $200 million.
Within the first 2 months?
No, total. Okay. That's, yeah. That was total in revenue, by the way. So, yeah. Pretty shocking there. Apparently, Mass Effect 3 sold 7 million copies. Mass Effect 2 sold 5 million. Mass Effect 1 sold 2 million. So, if Veil Guard really did only sell about 1.2 to 1.5 in the first month, you said, that's that's barely like reaching the total sales of Mass Effect in 2007. That's not great. However, I can also see why 3 million may have been ambitious from EA. Okay, well, I'll leave that debate for the business guys to hash out. But moving on, we have some people, the most important part of BioWare to talk about, people who are sadly no longer working there. Genesis, you had mentioned Trick and Karen Weeks before. Why don't you go ahead and clue our listeners in as to why they may recognize those names?
Yeah, Trick and Karen have been there for over 20 years. True talks about like over 20 years, Karen being there for just slightly less at 19. They've been working on different characters. Like, I love the characters that Karen has written. Huge influence, especially on Dragon Age. And to see these veterans go, I think these two definitely hit the hardest. I took screen caps of what they posted directly on Blue Sky. And so from what I have just a quick glance through it, doing a little bit of research through who's been reposting other things and things like that, I did get the names of about 10 people who were part of this, 9 people who were part of the layoff process. Corinne and her postings, who left earlier than this round of layoffs, and one person who I'm assuming was part of this permanent relocation.
For those of you who don't know, I'm pretty sure Trick Weeks worked on Tally and Legion's stories in Mass Effect 2, correct?
That sounds right.
Among so much other work that they've done for the series. Teacup, Sheikup, can you clue us in the Mass Effect fandom? Can you clue us in a little bit about what Corinne worked on?
Yeah, so Corinne was the game director for the Veil Guard. So she was kind of over the development of it. And I don't know if she was over it for all of its development. I would have to imagine no, but definitely these last quite a few years. So that's hugely impactful. But I also just wanted to mention that, you know, Trick is the writer of Solas, who, love him or hate him, is one of the most iconic characters and one of the best written characters in all of Dragon Age. He is so divisive because he's so well written. And, you know, I know that multiple writers work on the same character, but Trick is the primary person behind Solas. So I felt like that needed to be mentioned.
Mm. Yeah. They're also noted as the lead writer for both the Jaws of Hakken DLC, obviously the Trespasser DLC of Inquisition, and the lead writer of the Veil Guard.
Gotcha. Yeah. So this is a lot of experience walking out the door. And I feel like it is inevitable that we will miss their professional creative work when the next Mass Effect comes out. Maybe somewhere down the line, they'll have a chance at coming back and working a little bit on it. Genesis, you had already compiled multiple other people who you saw had announced on Blue Sky that they were gone. Tell us about some of their positions. What were they doing at BioWare?
Yes, we have the systems designer supervisor, Blair Thorburn, who I believe is one of the people who was relocated because they stated, "I was not laid off, but I am also no longer a BioWare employee." So I think that that's kind of the evidence that we have of that one. Ryan Cormier is an editor on Star Wars The Old Republic, Anthem, and Dragon Age The Veilguard. Had been there for a very long time with 26 plus years of experience across video games, novels, short stories, and newspapers. That's a long time to be in the writing industry and to be let go. Jennifer Chavry was a tester, analyst, and producer on Mass Effect 3. Dragon Age Inquisition, Anthem, and Veilguard. After 14 years, was let go. Danielle Steed, a producer at Star Wars The Old Republic, Legacy of the Sith, and Dragon Age The Veilguard. Lena Anderson, a senior production manager. Michelle Flam, a systems designer with 10 plus years of experience, is now gone.
Now, Genesis, I'm going to hop in real quick because I do want to mention that in some of these screenshots that you've taken of these former employees posting to social media, it appears as if they learned of their own layoff from the news that was breaking. Like the timing with which they were posting to social media and saying, like in Jennifer Chavry's case, writing, "I am devastated to learn today that myself and others must seek new opportunities." You took this screenshot after the BioWare blog post went up, correct?
Yes. Yeah, because we talked about that in the morning that the blog post went up, and then when I got home for the day is when I started taking these screenshots. And, you know, we're talking like 6 hours, 5 hours, 8 hours, all within a time frame of blog post went up. All these people are posting that they have just learned that their job is gone.
Which, again, in terms of transparency, doesn't speak very highly of how this has been handled, because and also not just, you know, the fact that they were saying that they learned today, but so many of these posts read like people who were completely blindsided by layoffs or reassignments or whatnot, that they were not given so much time as was reported by Jason Schreier, that they were kind of warned, at least some of them were warned in December, and then come late January, boom.
And I also have to add, this is a very similar experience to the conversation we had in August of 23, when they had layoffs then. A lot of the posts then sounded as if they had just found out. So this is not really a new situation, even though, again, it's unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Genesis, I'm sorry. I think you had a few more people that we know have left BioWare.
Yes. Mad B, who is a UX designer, senior writer Cheryl Chi, who wrote Dragon Age's Leliana, Isabella, Blackwall, and Harding, and the cinematic designer Derek Wilkes, were both moved to EA Motive.
Okay, so. Wow. So there's a lot of writers. If I'm seeing this right, there's a lot of writers who have just like been plucked from BioWare or laid off, or and I wish that we could speak with this with more authority as to who's gone where, but it would help if the company was more transparent. The fact that they've taken so many writers away, do you think that that's like a referendum on Veil Guard?
I don't really know. I mean, I don't put anything past a corporation, as I spoke earlier. I do not think highly of corporations. But I do think it's crazy when we think about the success of the Dragon Age franchise. Like, even a game that was mixed received, like Dragon Age 2, still did really well and was well received. Dragon Age Inquisition won the first Game of the Year award at the Game Awards. Like, they were the first winner of that award. And so I think that when you come down to a point of, you have these writers who have produced great things, you fire them after their first thing that didn't really land. That seems shitty. But Cheryl Chi is a, along with the Weeks, like, this is a huge loss. Like, she has been with Dragon Age and BioWare forever. And she wrote some a lot of people's favorite characters and big characters who have been throughout the lore and everything like that. And I just think that the people who have left don't make me very positive for any future of Dragon Age. Mass Effect, I think, is a little more, like you said, hopeful.
Well, I will say that if any of these layoffs were a direct response to Veil Guard not performing as well as EA had hoped, then I hope that some people in the captain's chair and the quarterbacks of the football team, so to speak, are also facing sacrifice. Because too often it seems like in corporate America now, those who make the product are punished, and the product designers and makers are given less resources and told to make an even better product, and inevitably the business people above them never have to suffer the same way. Hopefully that is not the case. However, the cynical side of me says that it might be. All right. So on that note, why don't we go ahead and wrap up? And I'm going to ask each of you, starting with you, Genesis, how do you feel about the future of Mass Effect?
I am worried, yet I am the person to always hold on to optimism. I have to hold on to hope. I have to hold on to the light at the end of the tunnel, and that things will always get better. You weren't a part of this conversation, but back in the day, it was said that the next Dragon Age was going to be an MMO, and it was going to completely shift everything. And I was like, ugh, that's so not what I want at all out of a Dragon Age game. And I held out hope. And then I got new characters that I have fallen in love with and new characters that continued and expanded the lore. And so I'm going to hold out hope that Mass Effect is going to be something that I'm going to enjoy. A lot of people were like, Andromeda's not, it's not a Mass Effect game. It's not a Mass Effect story. No, it's just not a Shepard story. It may not have been the story that I wanted after completing Mass Effect 3. Of course, I wanted to know if Shepard and Garrus ran off and adopted 100 Krogan babies. That's what I wanted to know happened. And I didn't get that answer. But you know what? I got a story with Ryder. And it was a story that I enjoyed. And it expanded the lore of the Mass Effect universe. And so, yeah, you hold out hope. And if I don't enjoy the next Mass Effect story, that's the story that they wrote. That's the story that they wanted to put out. Whether I enjoy it or not is my own personal opinion. But let the people who want to do the job do the job.
Yeah. Snaps. Snaps. 2 in 7 days ago, I found myself in an interesting position where I had relayed some information that was given to me from someone that I know who used to work for BioWare, where I relayed that and I was not feeling great about the future of Mass Effect. And this was right around the same time that Grubb had mentioned that he didn't think the next Mass Effect would come out until, I think he said, 2029. And I was very cynical. I wasn't as confident as to put a number on when I thought the next Mass Effect would come out. But I don't know if I've gained any more optimism since then. At the time, I was basically told that the next Mass Effect is so far away that I really shouldn't count on it like anytime soon. And you remember how like I joked with you for quite a while that I was going to have a baby by the time the next Mass Effect came. And now my son is just 9 weeks away from being born. By the way, for all of our listeners, in case I hadn't told you yet, the due date for my son is Shepard's birthday. So if he comes right on the due date, that's insane. I did not try for that timing. I'm not that accurate. That would actually be insane in and of itself, even if I was trying. But when I talk about the future of Mass Effect now, like I said, I don't know if I feel any more optimistic. I got a lot of crap, by the way, for what I said about the future of Mass Effect two and seven days ago, when I said that, you know, I had spoken with a source and people were like, who the hell is this guy? I mean, totally fair response. Who am I? But I still don't feel any better. That being said, Jason Schreier ends his article with writing, "Now BioWare studio head Gary McKay and Mass Effect executive producer Mike Gamble are essentially looking to reboot the company as they plunge forward on their next game. It will be a long road ahead, and what emerges will be a very different BioWare." End quote. If Schreier is like a lot of other reporters that I know, then he knows or has heard far more than he's currently reporting. Because you have to work to confirm details and so on and so forth. So if Schreier is being rather optimistic in his outlook, which, by the way, if a journalist ends an article about layoffs by saying it will be a long road ahead, but what emerges will be a very different BioWare, that's optimistic. So if Schreier is being rather optimistic as far as a journalist goes, then I feel a compulsion to at least practice somewhat of the same. That said, how am I optimistic? Well, one word, Morrowind. This is something that goes back to like the early 2000s. For those of you who don't know, The Elder Scrolls III Morrowind was released from Bethesda when Bethesda was almost bankrupt. The developers were essentially told, like, this is it. You know, like, if you guys don't, you know, find a way to make this work, we're done. We're donezos. And what happened was the developers said that they just had fun with it. And they didn't exactly, as far as I'm aware, they didn't exactly tell their, like, superiors the full truth about what they were working on, but they made a game that they wanted to make, and it was a work of art, weird and alien art at that, but awesome, and it revolutionized the RPG realm for console players and PC players as well. It was one of the first huge, like polygonal. RPG, open world RPGs, where you could really go and do and be anything. That's why I'm optimistic, because as Schreier writes, Gary McKay and Mike Gamble are looking to reboot the company, Schreier says, and that it'll be a long road ahead, but what emerges will be a different BioWare. According to Schreier's reporting, it kind of sounds like he's saying that their backs are against the wall, and this very well might be it. And from what I've seen, not just in artists, but in human beings, is that sometimes our best work is done when we are, when our backs are against the wall, when there's a fire under our butt. That doesn't justify, by the way, the fire itself. That doesn't justify having their backs to the wall, or any other kind of poor treatment that corporate might hand them. That doesn't justify any of that. However, what I am saying, though, is that sometimes people surprise you. And I think that given the adventures, given the laughs and the tears and all of the memories that this game series has provided us, that I would be remiss if I don't hold out hope that these people might surprise me yet again. So that's how I feel about the future of Mass Effect for right now. I am simultaneously cynical. So go make sense of that. All right. I think that's pretty much all we have to say on the topic. Next week, we are going to be getting back to our bread and butter, our lore episodes, but we did feel like we needed to cover this for now. For at least for now. We'll table it for now. We're getting back to lore. Genesis, what do you got going on? How can people get a hold of you?
Getting a hold of me on the Discord is definitely the best way. Tag me on there. You can find me in the Mass Effect Lorecast channel or on my other two channels, the Two Girls, One Ship and the Cyberpunk Lorecast.
All right. Teacup? She Cup? Which one of you wants to go first? What do you got going on? How can people get a hold of you?
You can find, Shelby can say her own, or She Cup can say her own things, but you can find both of us on our Discord, the Cups Podcasting and More Discord. We're also in all the Discords. That's what I say. You can find us on all the Discords. And we host, obviously, the Dragon Age Lorecast and the Assassin's Creed Lorecast. You can check those out on wherever podcatchers. And that, Shelby, do you have anything to add?
Just ditto everything you said. Yeah, I'm okay. We're both on all the Discords, so yeah, find us wherever.
All right, awesome. And I am streaming every weekend. I didn't stream this past weekend because I got a late notification last week. My boss in my day job asking me, hey, can you work the 4 a.m. shift on Monday, which meant I was not able to stream on Sunday. But I am going to be streaming every Sunday. I'm going to be trying to stream every Sunday, external circumstances notwithstanding. Every Sunday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. And I'm going to be streaming my newly revamped Cyberpunk playthrough. So come on by for that if that's your jam. I'm thinking about having a second stream in the middle of the week when I have time, taking suggestions on that. But until next time, Spectres, that's all we got for now. So stay frosty, and some words of wisdom a la Tom would give you if he were here. Be transparent in all of your business dealings, and it will pan out better for you in the long run. All right. So long, Spectres. Thanks for listening to the Mass Effect Lorecast. Reach out to us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Discord, Patreon, or email us at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Join us next week for more lore. Same space, same time. Or check out our live streams at twitch.tv/masseffectlorecast.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.